Welcome into another Daily Wager Extra podcast. We are taping this week 15, Sunday night, December 19th. I'm Doug Kazarian alongside Mackenzie Kramer. And we have four more games still left on this week. Obviously, adjusted schedule. So Mackenzie is going to join me momentarily. But just a reminder, we tape this Sunday nights or Monday mornings, depending on the schedule. And then we have a longer version with an odds maker, John Murray, on Thursdays. Of course, Christmas week, we'll tweak some things. But the 10 minute Daily Wager podcast Monday through Friday, still an abbreviated version of everything. So best of luck to everyone, but let's get to it with Mackenzie. And how are you doing, Mac?
I'm doing great, Doug. It was one of my best gambling weeks of the year, so at least I have that going for me, even though I'm pretty worried about my Tom Brady's MVP futures going forward.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So I wonder if Rodgers is going to get reposted as the favorite after tonight's shutout.
So actually, they have reposted it. I was actually following it during the game. So entering the week, Brady was the minus 180 favorite. He was still minus 180 entering Sunday night. Aaron Rodgers moved from 6-1 to 4-1 after his game, after they beat the Ravens. In the second half, Brady moved to minus 150, and now he's minus 110. So Brady's still the odds-on favorite to be the MVP, but it's a lot closer now. Rodgers is the second favorite at plus 225. Mahomes is number three at 10-1. And Jonathan Taylor, now fourth in the MVP race at 15-1. He was 30-1 entering the week until he blew up against the Patriots on Saturday.
So obviously a big setback for Brady's MVP campaign and Tampa's pursuit of the one seed. I mean, look, everyone thought they'd cakewalk with the four remaining games against teams losing records after last week's win over the Bills. But obviously, that's why you play the games. Look at Detroit and Arizona today. But take a step back. The chalk did not hold serve. Mackenzie, we talked about it last week. What did you say? 9-0 ATS last week. Any favorite of 3.5 or higher. 17-2 ATS the previous 2 weeks. But finally, we saw some dogs barking with outright wins.
Yeah, if you look at the overall spreads, home teams, favorites, there really wasn't anything that stood out entirely. In fact, home teams, 6-6 ATS, 6-6 straight up. Favorites 6-6 against the spread. So either way you want to look at it, it's pretty 500 week there. So no overarching trends there. Unders did go 7-5 this week, continuing a trend of unders hitting most of the year other than last week. So, but yeah, we had the two double digit underdogs winning in New Orleans and Detroit. It's the second time that's happened this year. Also happened in week 9. It's the third time in the last 40 years we've had two dogs this big win in the last that time. It's the second straight season happening in week 15, actually. Last year, the Jets did it against the Rams. The Bengals beat the Steelers. So we did have a couple of the big dogs barking, but overall, it's a pretty even day.
You know, obviously, the books are happier after last week, especially the bloodbath, the second half comeback by the Packers against, I mean, just everybody loading up, and they covered the double digits. Nagy kicked that field goal. So a lot, you know, just the balance, just the kind of how it pans out. You get the upset of like a dog of like 7, things like that. Some don't, teasers didn't cover. I bet you a lot of pushes on some teasers with the Packers, those kind of games. I was on the Jets as my best bet. So things like that. So the books are going to be fine, obviously, after last week. But the public took a little bit of a beating. I bet you the public was on the Bucks, although double-digit favorites, not typically what they're on, but I would imagine Brady and company, that was where the backing was. So let's start with it. Let's put this Brady Bucks loss outright into perspective from a betting perspective here.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not even the biggest upset this week, obviously, with Detroit, but a couple of trends on this game. Saints are now 12-6 outright as underdogs over the last 4 years. They had lost 4 straight entering Sunday. So this was a little bit of a bounce back spot for them. The Saints have always been really good as a dog since Sean Payton arrived. Obviously, Sean Payton didn't coach in this game. It would have been the biggest underdog spot they've had under Sean Payton, though, again, he didn't coach in this game. The last time they were this big of a dog was back in 2005, the year before they hired Payton. That was the longest active streak in the NFL without being a double-digit underdog. So a couple things with Tampa Bay also. Bucks are the first double-digit favorite to get shut out since 1994. So that's been a while for that. And one of your favorite trends, too, Tom Brady in primetime, 1-10 against the spread in his last 11 starts, 5-6 outright, and he's been a favorite in every single one of those. So Brady in primetime, and I do like to talk about his sleep schedule getting disrupted. So
Morty Seinfeld theory, that's the one we started on the podcast. So, yeah, that's the theory we busted out on the pod.
No, it's definitely one of my favorite trends that you have. A couple other quick things in that game. The under is now 6-1 in Taysom Hill starts, which, you know, kind of makes sense the way he likes to play quarterback. The Bucks have covered 4 in a row. They have been 5-1 against the spread as a double-digit favorite this year. And like you mentioned earlier, they'll probably be double-digit favorites again the next 3 weeks. 2 games against Carolina, 1 game against the Jets. You like to think that that would help his MVP case, though Carolina's pass defense isn't bad. The Jets don't play defense anywhere, so he should be able to rack up numbers there. And according to FPI, the Saints' playoff chances increased from 26% to 51%. So huge game for New Orleans, as they're now in the playoffs if the season were to end right now, though a few of the teams are a half game back of them that'll play over the next 2 days.
Now, it's a giant mess with that extra wild card that was added a year ago. So it certainly makes things interesting. And teams that are like 7-6 and all that are now much more in the playoff picture. So let's go to that Lions game. Cardinals, wow, I was not expecting that. I had the Lions to cover, but that was significant and a really big blow to Coach of the Year candidacy for Kingsbury. But really, the Cardinals were in prime position to have a high seed, and that did not go well in Detroit.
When you mentioned Coach of the Year, I think all of the major award races kind of got blown up this week. The MVP with Tom Brady, Coach of the Year with Kingsbury losing, with Belichick losing, with Vrabel losing. Like a lot of big favorites lost this week in the Coach of the Year race. But as for this game, it's the second largest upset this season, only behind the Bills-Jaguars game earlier in the year. Bills-Jaguars, by the way, was the only game until this week where no team scored a touchdown until the Saints-Bucks joined them this week. First time the Cardinals lose on the road all year. Also the first time they don't cover on the road all year. Lions now 9-5 against the spread this year, 8-2 against the spread when getting at least 4 points. So every time the Lions get a big number, they tend to cover, though. What some bad news in the window, the Lions fall out of the number one pick in the draft that now falls to Jacksonville. But either way, big day for Detroit sports with the Lions and Pistons winning. You could have gotten that money line parlay at about 19-1 odds. First time they went on the same day since 2017. And I saw this on Twitter. I wish I can give credit, but I forgot the person's name. But first time they've both won by double digits on the same day since 1973. So great day for Detroit sports.
So even all those years of Barry Sanders and the moat and the bad boys never quite got those stars aligned. Interesting stuff. I say this all the time. Goff is good for like 2 games a year where he just looks lights out. And I think that today he was pretty smooth and pretty on target with a lot of his throws. Now it helped to play in a dome and he's bad, you know, cold weather quarterback. But you just got to kind of throw those games out. But the Lions play hard. They've been a nice bet on team for sure.
And it doesn't get any easier for Arizona either. Arizona faces the Colts next week. That line's only 1.5 in favor of Arizona at home. So if you give, 1.5 points for home field, that's basically a pretty even matchup according to the odds makers next week.
Yeah, Colts are a chic pick. I was talking about them for a couple months. We've talked about it on this podcast, but he's saying 30-1, 20-1 just to win the AFC. Obviously, the win over New England certainly bolstered their chances of getting to the playoffs and then perhaps positioning themselves to make a run. Let's go to some other double digits. Let's go through the double digit games, then we'll get to some of the closer expected games, at least one of those point spreads. Bills hang on against the Panthers. The old fourth down play action touchdown instead of kicking a field goal in the red zone. So the Bills win by 17. Cam Newton is terrible, continues to be terrible, but 14-point line. That line got steamed up and it took the play action and touchdown pass by Josh Allen.
Yeah, I almost wrote up the Bills laying 10. I couldn't decide what to do with the Bills in that game early in the week when we had to submit our picks. I like the Bills laying 10.5. I like the Panthers team total under. Couldn't quite decide on which one to pick, so I just ended up laying off a bit. But I did bet on both of those, so I was pretty happy about that. Fading Cam Newton has just been, pretty money this year. 0-4 against the spread this year with Cam Newton starting. Bills, fourth time this year they've been at least a 2-touchdown favorite most in the NFL this year. So nice win for Buffalo to get back to 8-6.
That's pretty incredible, being a 14-point favorite 4 times in one season.
And they still face the Jets again.
Where does that rank all time? Do we know?
I did not prepare that, but that I will prepare that going forward because looking at their schedule, they have a home game against Atlanta and they have a home game against the Jets. So those will both be 14-point favorites, assuming the Bills have something to play for, which they probably will.
Virtually simultaneously to that play-action touchdown pass by Allen, Jake Fromm and the Giants were in the red zone, threatening that double-digit spread, and then they ran out of downs. The defense Cowboys kind of turned up the notch on the blitzing, and they hang on 21-6. The Giants are bad, offensively particularly. Mike Glennon gets the start Jake Fromm, like I mentioned, was in relief in garbage time, but I'm surprised. We talked about it a week ago. I'm surprised Joe Judge is still there. I guess midseason coaching changes never advised, but look, I mean, this was like kind of what you expected. It came down to a backdoor potential.
Yeah, it's hard to really have any faith in the Giants right now with that offense. They actually are relatively healthy if you look at their skill position players. Obviously, Daniel Jones is out, but yeah, this Giants team is just really rough right now. Mike Glennon, 1-15 outright in his last 16 starts. It was the first time the Cowboys were double-digit road favorites against the Giants since 1980, just to help show how far down this Giants franchise has come. And the Cowboys are now 11-3 against the spread this year, which is tied for the Packers for the best record in the NFL after Green Bay lost ATS today. Dallas is 9-0 ATS in conference games, 8-1 against teams with losing records, 7-1 on the road, and 4-0 ATS as a road favorite. So Cowboys have gotten it done all sorts of ways this year.
Kyle Shanahan, usually not solid in the home favorite role, but does get the cover. I say double-digit spreads, but it was close, 9, 9.5. Niners pull away against the Falcons. Matt Ryan, I believe the Falcons had 5 trips in the red zone and came away with 13 points.
Yeah, you got to feel pretty
not
bad
great,
for anybody. Got to feel pretty bad who took the over. Anybody who took the over in that game, because that one really should have gone over. But to your point, though, Kyle Shanahan, second straight win and cover as a home favorite. But before that, he had gotten 0-9 outright in his previous 9 games, 0-11 ATS. He's got a really bad record as a home favorite, though. Maybe that's starting to turn. He'd also been bad as a big favorite. He had been 0-4-1 ATS as a favorite of at least 9 points. So this is the biggest spread he's covered in his career. Falcons continue to struggle against good teams. They're 0-5 against the spread and straight up against teams with winning records. This Falcons team, on paper, you think is pretty easy to predict. When they face teams that are anywhere near their level, they can compete. But whenever they have to step up in competition, they get steamrolled like they did today.
So prior to this run of 2, the Falcons, Shanahan, in 9 straight games as a home favorite, he had lost outright.
Every single one, yep.
Remarkable. Remarkable. Okay. Does that cover the double-digit or big favorite portion of the broadcast? Oh, no, I guess the Packers steamed up that high as well. It was 7 the morning of the show. And this at 6 a.m. when we taped the show. It was 9 at kickoff, I believe. What a game. We knew Tyron Huntley. We talked about it in the show saying he's going to be good. I was an advocate of laying the 7. And very different. We talk about it all the time. Very different when a quarterback enters mid-game versus has a full week of practice to prepare. And that was the difference between Huntley last week and this week. But even the second half, he got warmed up. He played well against the Browns. Down 14. Ravens make it interesting. Go for 2 again like they did against the Steelers and do not get it.
Well, what I don't get is if you're going to go for 2 to try to win it at the end, why don't you go for 2 down 14? That's what every analytical metric will tell you to do. When you're down 14, you go for 2 the first time. That way, if you get it, you only need the extra point the next time around. And if you don't get it, it's like, all right, we're down 8. We can go for 2 and try to tie it up. And Harbaugh last week gave some great speech on why he went for 2 points down 15 against the Browns, basically saying that you want the information ahead of time to know whether you're going to be down 9 or down 7. This week, he doesn't even listen to his own advice and kicks the extra point. And then they don't get the 2-point conversion and they don't have the chance to make up for it later. So I don't understand what they did there, though.
I'll tell you why. So you're supposed to do it really in like when you're like in 3 minutes or need a guard, you need like the onside kick. In this situation, I think it was unwise to go for it because the Packers still had 1 timeout and 40 seconds and Aaron Rodgers. So you're not really going for the win. Like the Steelers game in the final seconds when you score a touchdown, yeah, you're going for the win, right? In this case, you're going for the lead, and that is why I do not agree with that decision. Also, to your point, there was so much time when they scored that first touchdown that you don't know if that's how it's all going to play out because you might score with 40 seconds left and want to kick an extra point just to tie the game because of Rodgers. Also, there's a chance like Rodgers down or up 6 instead of 8 may not be as – or 6 instead of 7 may not be as vanilla on offense, trusting the run right away. There's all sorts of things. I just didn't think it was a very wise decision. They did not go for the win. They went for the lead. And that is important to keep that in mind.
I didn't really have a strong take on whether they should go for 2 at the end or not. I just think that if you're going to go for 2 at the end, why don't you do for it for the first time? I totally get your point that, you know, the Packers are going to try to score there, try to win the game if they're down by 1. But to me, you're the worst. You're the lesser team in this matchup. Your offense is probably the better unit in that game compared to the defense. If you think you got one chance to win it right there, I kind of get it. I don't think it's a bad decision one way or the other. Whether he kicked the extra point or gone for two, I wouldn't be criticizing him. I just criticize it for not going for two down 14.
Copy.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Jets and Dolphins. I was on the Mammals laying 9.5. They dug themselves a hole. Then came back up 7 with the ball. And then Tua botches it. And I thought they were going to get that touchdown, or excuse me, at least a field goal to go up 10. They did not. Pick 6. Later pick 6 for the Jets. And your New York team was a little frisky today.
The Dolphins are – I don't understand the Dolphins. The Dolphins should have blown out this Jets team. But
I'm aware.
They gave the Jets so many chances in this game. They went for a fake punt in the fourth
I don't
quarter.
Think it was a called fake punt. I think
I don't know what it was. It was
Flores was not looking like he had called that thing.
I think you're right, but it was just strange to watch. And they could have run the ball on 4th-and-1 from any point in the field. The Jets had no answer for the Dolphins' running game, which was led by Duke Johnson, who had barely played in the NFL all year. It's the second game all year he's played for them. It seemed like they wanted to give Duke Johnson some touchdowns in his home ballpark. In fact, if you look at the Jets' first touchdown was by Braxton Berrios, who went to Miami. Duke Johnson scored 2 touchdowns. He went to Miami. So it seemed like both teams wanted to give the Miami guys some touchdowns in their home stadiums. But Jets are now 4-10 against the spread. We're actually getting the cover this week, tied with Jacksonville for the worst mark in the NFL. Those two teams will play each other next week. So major draft implications in that one, even if there's no real life implications on that one with Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, top 2 picks squaring up, but no juice will be behind that game. As for Miami, 6 straight win, but they didn't cover this time. They're the 4th team in NFL history to get back to 500 after a 1-7 start. So Dolphins back in this playoff race.
Yeah, they're not bad. To your point, I think they get a little vanilla on offense. I don't think they trust Tua, so they have a lot of these throws of the flat and very conservative. They don't throw the ball really downfield, but eventually that'll catch up with them against good teams. But you're right. They have 1-6 straight, looking much better than they did when they started the year, 1-7. Let's get to some better games. Steelers, Titans. I thought Pittsburgh would start strong. They finished strong, outscored Tennessee 16-0 in the second half, the defense stepping up. Not a goal line stand, but a red zone stand at the end of the game. It was a close measurement, although I think if he got the first down, they would have challenged and realized the spot was way too favorable for Tennessee. He was about a solid half yard to a yard short, so they made it interesting. Got shades of the index card, I was thinking, as Sterator was in the booth for that. And basically, this is kind of what we thought. Pittsburgh kind of kitchen sink game. And would bring it eventually, kind of outgrind the Titans, who are just so limited right now.
I just can't believe you said let's get to some better games, and you brought up the 19-13 game where neither team had any hope to do anything offensively. I mean, it was a close game. There were some entertaining moments in the game. Was it a fun watch? I'm not totally sure about that, but I was on Pittsburgh in this game, so I was pretty happy about that. I even mentioned last week on this pod, I like Pittsburgh as a home dog. The favorite actually flipped in this game with Pittsburgh closing as the favorite. Kind of interesting because both of these teams have been really good as underdog, but really bad as favorites. So, I mean, not that the spread really affects anything that way, but just funny looking at the trends that way. In fact, before this game, Pittsburgh had failed to cover 9 straight games as a favorite, including the playoffs. So they snapped that streak. Tennessee had been 5-1 outright as a dog this year, but now they have 2 straight losses. Pittsburgh, every team in this AFC North division now has 6 losses this year. And the Steelers, I don't know why I bet them before the game. I should just wait until late in the game and just bet them in the third quarter, bet them in the fourth quarter. In fact, if you look at them recently, they've outscored their opponents 81-37 in the fourth quarter in the last 5 games. And the first 3 quarters, they've been outscored 113-33. So they're scoring about 2.5 times as many points in the fourth quarter of these games as they are in the first 3 quarters. I don't know what it is with this Steelers offense that they don't show up until late in these games. I tweeted earlier today that they kind of remind me of the Tim Tebow Broncos, where I don't know how they're winning these games, but they just seem to linger around early in these games. Then late in the fourth quarter, they find a way to win. And it seemed that way today again.
Speaking of that first half, second half disparity, I believe four straight games Steelers have yet to score a touchdown in the first half. And here I am betting first half. Yeah. Let's go to a game that was very hyped. Just kidding. Texans, Jaguars. The steam on the Jags, thinking they get rid of Urban Meyer, the stench out of the building. Jags got some steam, which I never really understood because the roster still isn't good. And closed six. It was open 3.5. Just remarkable. And then the Texans go wire to wire, and Davis Mills looked okay. He looked like a pretty decent game.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before where the coach gets fired and the line moves 2.5 points for them because everybody thinks they're going to be motivated with the coach being gone. You're right. That line closed at six. It was 3.5 before Urban was fired. It was 3 when it opened. So, but Jacksonville is a favorite. You just can't trust them. Last 11 games is a favorite. They're 2-9 outright. 0-3 the last two seasons. 0-2 this year, both against Houston and both double-digit losses. And as I mentioned earlier, Jacksonville now holds the number one pick in the NFL draft next year for the second straight year.
As of now. Now, we
shall
see.
With that Jaguars-Jets game, we'll have a lot to do with that next week.
Oh, yeah, well, a game that I was watching, so I was on the second half under. Vic Fangio does not understand the concept of timeouts and game management.
Oh, my goodness.
Bengals win 15-10. Teddy Bridgewater taken to a nearby hospital. Drew Lock came in, threw a touchdown pass. The Bengals answers. That was the rapid fire back-to-back touchdowns near the end of the third quarter. But outside of that, it was field goals and punting and Vic Fangio looking confused on the sideline.
Yeah, Vic Fangio calling timeout, literally costing his team 40 seconds in the final 2 minutes when your team's down by a couple points. Not what you're looking for a head coach there. We talk about this every single week, but just hire a 13-year-old who knows Madden and maybe give him a little bit of extra teaching of the rule book to let him know about the 25-second clock and timeouts when there's injured players. But it was just I don't understand what Vic Fangio is doing, but betting on his unders continues to be a profitable move. 28-18, Vic Fangio under since he became the Denver head coach. Bengals are 3-1 outright in ATS as a road dog this year. It's their fewest points at a win in 7 years. And now the Bengals and Ravens, 8-6 on top of the AFC North. Bengals host the Ravens next week, and the Browns and Steelers are on the road against Green Bay and Kansas City. So next week, that Bengals-Ravens game is going to be huge for that division.
Yeah, there was talk of that was the thought process of sitting Lamar. You know, I mean, he probably could have played if it was a playoff game, but like the next week's game against the Bengals matters so much more. And since he's positioned themselves quite well, so good job by them. And they have a tough schedule the rest of the way, but they were not favored, according to FPI, in any of their four remaining games. Get the win in Denver to start things off. So that's a step in the right direction. Packers-Ravens, we touched on that game. I was really impressed with Hundley, so I wanted to just kind of make sure, like, he was, you know, all that preseason work that Harbaugh loves, maybe it actually does have some utility come regular season time. So Hundley was ready to rock, and the offense looked the same at times. I actually think it really hurt Lamar Jackson's MVP campaign if he was in the picture at all. That was not good for him because just how clean Hundley ran that offense. But obviously, like I said earlier, four remaining games on the schedule. So that was, and we've already had two. So that was a light Sunday card for us, McKenzie.
Yeah, NFL Research tweeted that's the fewest touchdowns on an NFL Sunday since, I believe, the 1970s. I'm trying to pull up the tweet as I'm talking right now. Fewest on an NFL Sunday with at least 10 games since 1994, according to NFL Research. So, we're not used to a Sunday with this little action, but I'm glad you circled back to this Packers-Ravens game because I have a couple other nuggets on this game.
That was the game of the day, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. That was the game of the day, and we only really talked about the Duke point conversion, but you're right. Tyler Huntley played really well for them in that game, and no matter what line you got on the Ravens or on the Packers, you lost. I mean, the look ahead on that was either Green Bay -1.5 or Green Bay -2. I heard some people that took that last week. That would have been ruined by the two-point conversion. The line opened Packers -7, went all the way down to 4.5, closed at 9. So there was a ton of line movement on this game. There have been a ton of line movements on all these games with all the COVID issues, though. Some of them got postponed or moved back a couple of days. So that might affect your bets on that. They might be voided on that. But it was the largest home underdog spot for the Ravens since 2015. And the Ravens under John Harbaugh continue to be really, really good as an underdog, especially recently. The last 4 years, so since they drafted Lamar Jackson, they are 13-1 ATS as a dog. And you might say, hey, that's all Lamar Jackson. Well, They've been dogs four times without Lamar in that span, and they covered all four of those times as well. So the Ravens, the dog under John Harbaugh, continue to be really good. With their playoff chances, they dropped all the way to 54%, according to FPI. With a win, they would have been up to 87%. So you mentioned that benching Lamar because next week's game is more important. But for the Ravens, all these games are important because they need a lot of wins because, like I mentioned earlier, all four teams in that division have six losses right now.
It's crazy. I'm just surprised the Steelers are still hanging around. I really am. That win in Baltimore, obviously a huge, huge help to that, and then the win today. So Steelers, I just thought they were going to be left for dead after like how things started the first month or so. But
and had they just beaten the Lions,
it's normal for a lot of those teams. Yeah, a lot of those teams tie the Lions, but a lot of teams are like that, right? Like a lot of nobody is just straight dominance. And even look at the Kansas City, and obviously we can talk about them because they're now the favorites. They've won seven straight, covered I believe five straight, and I don't even think they're that impressive. I mean, they escaped the game again, the win in L.A. Now, nice win to win at the Chargers, but I mean, let's face it, it's not like their defense really clamped down. They got away with a lot.
Absolutely, and now the Chiefs, after the Bucs lost, the Chiefs are now the Super Bowl favorites. Caesars has them plus 475 to win it all with the Bucs at 5-1. I don't know what team I would bank to win the Super Bowl right now, but I'm definitely not laying plus 475 chalk on anybody right now.
Yeah, no chance. Although the AFC is just a hot mess right now. So maybe by default, Kansas City would be my pick, but that's just because they have the least warts. Like all these teams have warts for sure. Now, obviously,
I still kind of like Buffalo, but they're going to have a tougher road since they have to use the wild card run most likely, though. We'll see because they face New England next week. So if they win that one, they'll have the tiebreaker in the AFC East because they'll have a better divisional record over New England.
Yeah, they've just been so inconsistent, right? So inconsistent. Okay, bud, anything else that we left out? I know you emptied the bucket just now on the Packers Ravens game. Any of the others?
I mean, I could even do a couple more on the Ravens. Like we talked about some of these teams that have been Jekyll and Hyde. The Ravens had all these games early in the year where they had about a 15-20% win probability, came back to win, and now it's kind of working out the other way. They're the first team in NFL history to lose three straight games by a combined 4 points or fewer. They've lost by 2 points once and then 1 point twice in the last three games. So been a real tough time for the Ravens. Now, granted, a couple of those games, you know, they had no real business winning those games, including today. But still, it's kind of crazy that they're coming so close in all these games. A couple quick notes for next week. Titans are home dogs, the 49ers. Tennessee's 2-0 outright as a home dog next week. Browns are getting 7.5 against Green Bay. That's the largest underdog spot for Cleveland this year. Kind of like the Green Bay in that one, if I'm being honest, especially with Cleveland down a short week and with their potential COVID issues. I mentioned the Cardinals and the Colts. That Ravens-Bengals line right now is Bengals 2.5 at home. The Bills-Patriots look ahead line, or really the opening line right now is Patriots minus 1.5 in New England. The Bills are 15-8-1 ATS, a dog with Josh Allen. And then the Steelers-Chiefs game I mentioned earlier. Steelers getting 10.5 right now. That would match the most points Big Ben has ever gotten as an underdog in his career.
Wow. Wow. All right, my man. Good stuff as always. Abbreviated week for Daily Wager. Just a show on Tuesday the 21st. And then the next Sunday we have some programming, jumping through hoops, things like that. You guys know how it is around the holidays. We'll have a podcast schedule and have you still be connected to our loyal audience. But best of luck on these Monday and Tuesday games. Couple doubleheader. Well, one's a doubleheader and the other's a singleheader, I guess, because they're both at the same time on Tuesday. Who knows? We'll figure that out. We'll have to hit workshop that term. But best of luck to everyone, and thanks so much.